Ohio Nation, and we are back. I am Rob, and today we are joined by a special guest. Go ahead and take it.
My name's Bill Wilkins, and I'm 72 years old, and I died in a chair from a hemorrhage in the fucking basement. My name's Bill Wilkins, and okay. I took a shit in the shower, and I fell in my own shit. Oh. Now I'm fucking dead. I died in my own shit.
Well, we're glad to have you here, Mr. Wilkins. This, today, if you can't, if you haven't figured it out yet, we are talking about the shit show that is Ed and Lorraine Warren.
And I'm Bill Wilkins.
Bill Wilkins.
If you haven't seen The Conjuring 2, then you have no idea what I'm talking about right now. And if you
sound like a crazy person,
if you've turned it off, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
But at least we got your episode download towards our stats.
Right. This is the listener winner.
Yeah, the listeners picked this
listener
one.
Poll winner. This was quite a fun one. There's a lot of...
It was a very tight race.
Yes.
Tight.
Yeah, it kind of... They took off. Like, the Ed and Lorraine votes took off for a while, and then they just kind of...
People just like ghostly stuff.
Right. I know. And I guess these people are the... These are the king and queen.
Yeah.
Of demonology and paranormal research.
And speaking of ghostly stuff, ooh, we are going to be on a South Korea FM radio station tomorrow night. It's going to be about midnight Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be about 1 p.m. their time. That's
was it South Korea or was it North Korea?
It's South Korea.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's TBS EFM. They don't have fucking radio in North
That's
Korea.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, oh, fuck.
They don't even, yeah, they don't have anything there.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's called a little...
Mr. Oon's taking care of all that.
A little this and a lot of that, I think it's... Or
something.
Something close
something
to
of that nature, yeah.
They're going to call us, and we're going to do a live on-air interview. Bro, Ohio's going places.
Yeah. By the time some of you guys hear this, we may have already been done. Yeah. So, who knows? We'll definitely let you know how that goes if you haven't. We'll try to get a maybe get a clip of that and figure out how to a way to put it up, too.
The thing is, I don't think they've listened to us.
I don't know.
I don't think they have. I'm about 98.9% sure they haven't listened to any of our shit.
Oh, I can't wait then.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to surprise them.
I'm going to try. I think if we start cursing, they'll hit the button and they'll turn us off.
Yeah. We'll try to keep it clean, but it's going to be kind of hard.
I'm going
to
try and sound like a sexual predator. use my Jeffrey Dahmer voice.
Yeah, we're ghost people.
Yeah, when in our free time, when we're not doing our podcast, we drive a van around. We got like YooHoos and like pogo sticks, and we give them out to all the kids in the neighborhood. But we may make them get inside the van. We talk to them about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ inside the van with the windows. Aluminum foil over the windows.
But don't worry, there's an air conditioning unit hanging out the back. Keep the kiddies nice and cool.
Oh, if you like this bicycle, I have some baseball cards in the spokes.
I was going to say that. Yeah, it's so stupid. Okay.
We're going to hell.
Well, yeah, we got that, and then we're going to do the show later on.
Yeah, there's going to be a Halloween show at a brewery in Miamisburg, Ohio.
Hopefully we'll be able to record that live and... Up as well, so that'll be real fun.
Slopping fucking drunk fest.
Yeah, oh, it's gonna be so great.
I think we're pushing for a thing. It's an event called Boo in the Berg, and it's a pub crawl, and there will be thousands of people that descend in the city.
Oh, I'll be crawling through the podcast if we have to do one.
Yes.
And it'll be glorious.
Right. I'm just gonna drag one of those little toilets you sit on in the shower, bring that and just sit on that while you do the
podcast.
I'll
just bring a bucket. All right, well, let's get into Ed and Lorraine's old funky asses.
Yeah. Oh, hold on. I got to do the plug. Oh,
yes, go ahead.
We're exchanging plugs with other podcasts across the internet here. And today, today we have the Front Row Movie Reviews. Are you tired of movie critics that seem to hate the movies they review?
Yes.
Then why not try the podcast for people who actually like movies? The Front Row Movie Reviews, boasting over 10 regular shows, the Front Row hits it all. Current releases, classics, 80s and 90s, flashbacks, Disney movies, and even a little television. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so you'll always have something to listen to. If you love movies and don't think you should apologize for it, then we'll see you in the Front Row. That's the Front Row Movie Reviews. They're on all your major podcast apps.
Yeah, make sure you guys go ahead and check out the Front Row Movie Reviews. That's
I really do enjoy plugging these other podcasts. So if you are from another podcast and you're listening, just shoot us an email. Yeah. We'll plug you guys in.
Shoot us an email, Facebook message,
as long as you promise
Instagram
to put
something
us in yours. That's, yeah, that's how that works.
Tradesies, sharing is caring.
Yeah, handsies. Back. I mean, is that the handsies?
And I think that's a sexual thing.
Is that where you jerk another man off?
I think so. It's a bro job.
I'm not really. As long, I've always heard when I was in prison, they always said as long as you keep your socks on, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. It's not gay if you have your socks on.
Right.
One in ermals?
Ermals.
Warp wing?
I better not.
We did indulge quite a bit last night. Yeah, all right. Anyways, let's go ahead and get into the Warrens here. A lot of people are probably really familiar with them. It is Ed and Lorraine Warren. They are a married couple who were highly controversial paranormal investigators and authors.
They alleged they covered over 10,000
investigations. Over 10,000 investigations, yes.
If you come to this podcast today to get completely like bone-chilling freaked out, I don't know if that's necessarily the vibe that we're going to portray the entire episode.
We're not. There was a list of things that they were that they had researched that they were pretty much famous for. We're pretty much going to be going over
some of the
things that the big ones that they've made movie adaptations of or books. Ed was born September 7th, 1926. Lorraine was born January 31st, 1927. They're both from Bridgeport, Connecticut. They were made famous by films, television, documentaries, like the 17 Amityville Horror series movies.
Right, their initial boom in fame was they were the investigators called in for the Amityville
and then the book,
shit show.
Yeah, and then the book came and it kind of blew everything up.
Yes.
The Conjuring, The Conjuring 2, and the Annabelle movie.
And then we have the new one, The Nun, that's coming out.
Yes,
shortly.
Yes, that's... I didn't look much into it.
I looked into it, and she is a completely fictional character that the Warrens never had any encounters with during their entire careers.
That's kind of like Enfield.
Right.
you can kind of get where we're going with this.
Yeah.
But we'll go ahead and do this the best of our the best of our research and the best of our understanding from what we've gathered. All these movies have been based off of findings or experiences that they claim are based off of their research.
Right.
They were a Roman Catholic couple, so you know they're in with the Vatican for the exorcisms, and that'll play a big part.
And I know there was I think it was a TV show, a movie made for TV type deal. It was called The Haunting, and I think it was based off the Devil in Connecticut investigation. And Lorraine Warren was... she was upset about how that was portrayed because there were a lot of inconsistencies with that investigation. And she was notably upset about the way that was made into a movie, that they switched a lot of things without her knowing.
Ed was a World War II United States Navy veteran. He was a former police officer. He later in life became a self-taught/self-proclaimed demonologist.
Okay.
That's a sweet...
Not to derail the Warren train already, but he was just a paranormal investigator until the exorcism came. Until the Exorcist movie came along, when the Exorcist movie came along and went, you know, just number one, fucking blew the country
up.
All of a sudden, he became a demonologist. He changed his name.
Funny how that happens.
Yes,
and an author and a lecturer. Lorraine, now she always claimed to be clairvoyant. And kind of like a light trance medium. So she could kind of feed off of the energy of different types of spirits.
And when Ed would pitch these investigations to the media and whatnot, he would always emphasize the importance of having a wonderful clairvoyant or medium. Hence,
which would make sense.
Them coming as a package deal, more marketable to...
Absolutely.
Everything.
You got one person who's familiar with the research side and the other person that can tap into the energies.
Talk to the dead.
Yes. Who doesn't want to do that? I think that'd be kind of cool.
I'm going to try and reach out to Biggie Smalls tonight before bed.
That'd be so great.
I just want to know. Like Biggie, can't you see?
Now, the Warrens founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, which is the oldest ghost hunting group in New England. Ooh, fancy claim.
I reached
claim.
Out. They're okay. So they've handed the reins down to another gentleman that they've worked with for 30 years. I reached out to him. He did not write back.
Fuck that guy.
They also have an extremely obese grandson that looks like he probably ingests
Cheeto dust into his veins.
A lot of Big Macs and Diet Coke. I said he was very open to doing podcast interviews. I did not reach out to him for reasons that can go unsaid at this point.
He had to put down the fast food in order to get to it. He's he's tired of leaving his keyboard dirty.
Phone's ringing, but I don't know where it's at underneath all these wrappers.
I don't want to move this juicy, juicy hamburger to pick up the mouth.
Now, a lot of the, in these researches that they would do, or these incidents, there would always be a main artifact or a main item that they would find that happened to be like the center of the hauntings, and they kept a lot of those and actually started their own like museum inside of their house, pretty much, of evil artifacts, which was called the Warren's Occult Museum. If you look at pictures of it, it's pretty interesting.
It's pretty spooky. You can stay the night with Annabelle now.
Yeah.
They call it a night with Annabelle, and occasionally Lorraine will show up, and she does like a lap dance type thing with her old dangler boobies hanging out.
It kind of just looks like your grandpappy's old room where he has all of his knickknacks, and it's a lot of dolls, a lot of just crazy.
See that right
weird
there?
Things.
That's a belt buckle I took off a goddamn Nazi back in 49 Poland.
And that's the juice scalp he had in his pant pocket.
Is it okay if I touch on how they kind of started?
Yeah,
Lorraine
go ahead. Go ahead.
So Ed and Lorraine, they met while he was a host at the movie theater, and Lorraine would come in every Wednesday with her mother to watch a matinee or whatever.
So sweet.
And Ed finally built up the courage to ask out Lorraine on a date, hit it off, no looking back. He joined the Navy when he was 17. I think he tried to join a little bit earlier, but it didn't happen. My wife's grandpa, he joined when he was 16. That was a big thing back then.
Yeah, I think it was like a coming of passage, like
fucking scary,
coming of age tale, like everybody enlisted.
So he went off to war. She got word that his ship had been sunk in a battle.
Oh.
He did not die, unfortunately. I'm just kidding. He came back for, they get 30 days leave anytime they're involved in a shipwreck and battle. And they got married during the 30 days home. He got out of the Navy. He comes home. They do this weird fucking shit, okay? He went to, like, art school, and he would paint pictures. And the way they would get into people's houses for these paranormal investigations, they would go sit up in the middle of the road in front of someone's house.
I remember you telling me this
and
story.
And he would just stare at the house and draw a picture. But he would not just draw the picture of the house. He would draw fucking evil, mean ghosts and shit flying out of the windows. And then when he was complete with the picture, Lorraine would take it up the front door. They also said the whole time while he's painting these pictures, there's people inside, like, running around, opening up blinds and shit, like, looking out, like, what the fuck? Hey! Call the fucking cops! But Lorraine would then take the picture up to the front door, and she's like,
excuse me, sir.
My name's Lorraine Warren, and I would like to present you with this magnificent picture of your home. And then the homeowner would be like, what the fuck is that shit flying out of the window? We have reason to believe that this home is haunted. May we come in and check? Ugh. So then they would go inside, and they would get their investigation. You know, they would go to houses that they'd heard were haunted. So they weren't just showing up to random fucking houses, I don't think.
That'd be even better.
But let me tell you something. In 2017, that's a good way to get shot.
Yeah.
Ugh. Americans love their guns.
Yeah, exactly. Their occult museum, they have termed as the oldest and only museum of its kind, which, of course, if it's the only museum of its kind, of course it's going to be the oldest. I don't know why that's a claim to fame for
it's
it.
A fucking retard.
and it actually attracts hundreds of thousands of visitors from across the world.
I would love to check it out.
I would love to. Let's get into some of the things here. Some of the cool things that they have inside of this museum. First thing I got is they have these
death dolls. There are two dolls which were used in black magic rituals. A death doll is, it's used to make someone sick, and it'll eventually kill them. So it's pretty much just something that's completely fucking
evil.
It's
like a shit show of a voodoo doll.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's kind of like a voodoo doll, except it you know, it'll kill you. I don't know if voodoo dolls are meant to kill or if they're meant to
hurt. I had a girl in the sixth grade make a voodoo doll of me. It didn't work.
Oh, that's a bummer.
It did not work.
She's like, I'm going to stab it right in the fucking dick.
Whatever, dude.
Have fun.
Yeah.
The death dolls used hair or clothes from the victim, and it had to be hung in a tree near the victim's house. So you had to get kind of oddly specific with it. Those dolls that the Warrens have are said to be over 100 years old, and a doll collector had actually bought them and stated that they would disappear for days and then reappear elsewhere in their house. So, of course, that kind of scared her, so she gave them to Ed and Lorraine for the museum after she said they were giving her bad luck.
Take this dog. I don't want it.
I don't want this shit no more. You're taking a bad luck. Another doll that was there, the African fertility dolls, which, fuck that. I don't need no African fertility.
I'm cool on that, bro. Yeah, I've watched Ace Ventura Nature Calls. I'm good.
All right. Now, this doll that they have was said it was used by a witch doctor in Africa. And then an unknown person stole that doll or these dolls from the witch doctor to send to relatives of theirs for them to sell. The man who stole the dolls mysteriously dies, and the person that receives them became paralyzed. 2 years later, he and his wife both died. Yeah. And then the dolls were given to Ed and Lorraine afterwards.
Sure, we'll take those. put those in a Ziploc baggie for me. I don't want to touch that shit.
I had to wet my whistle there. The Conjuring Mirror. This is a really cool piece that I actually found a lot on.
You know, we're kind of making a mockery of these people, but I've watched these Conjuring movies, and they scare the shit out of me.
They're good movies. They did a really good job making those movies.
Make my butthole tighter than a... God, man.
Than a sausage casing.
Yeah.
The Conjuring Mirror is...
Somebody say sausage?
Oh, God. It's a 5-foot-tall mirror. They have it hanging on the museum wall, like, right by Ed's office. I kind of say, I guess it's technically not his office anymore since he's dead, but... They have it mounted on the wall, and then there's a lot of stuff around it, and it's kind of obstructed a little bit. The mirror came from a man named Stephen Zellner, who used the mirror for a medieval ritual called speculum, or mirror magic. He used the mirror after doing incantation ritual or a conjuring formula.
See?
And it would invite a spirit to help him manipulate the future. So, essentially, he would do the ritual, he would focus on a person, and say he would want them to fall downstairs and break an arm. He would have to envision this.
I've wished that on people before.
I know. All you need is this conjuring mirror. Now, the way the ritual worked is that it wouldn't necessarily be Steven that made them fall. He would be using the mirror to command an inhuman spirit to do the act. Part of the ritual said that he had to pay homage to Satan, and he neglected to do this. Yeah. He neglected to do this. And the very same inhuman spirits that he tried to use to harm people actually infested his home because he wouldn't pay homage to Satan.
You'll have that with those bigger jobs.
He would often hear footsteps and heavy breathing that weren't his in his home. Doors were opening, objects were levitating and thrown around the room. Noises would wake him up at night. He became so scared in his own house, he called a Catholic official who asked for someone to send a demonologist. Who do they send, you ask? Well,
Eddie.
The church contacted Ed and Lorraine, went to help. Ed says they were there for an hour, and then cars in the street started honking. He looked outside of his window to see what was going on, and his car, which he parked in the man's driveway, was out in the middle of the street blocking traffic with all the lights on and just going crazy.
So that shit stain forgot to put it in park when he got yeah. there, is all that is.
He put his hazards on and forgot to put it in park.
They pulled up and they're fighting. He's like, if I have to, listen, I don't fucking care where we eat after we leave this piece of shit house.
If we can't pay rent after this visit, Lorraine, I'm beating the shit out of
I'm
you.
I'm not eating fucking crab cakes again. Let's get inside this fucking house and leave.
Now, once they got in...
Did I put the car in park?
I told you! Ed performed a reverse ritual for the one that Steven performed.
Oh, God.
So essentially, this reverse...
He's like, I got you, fam.
Yeah, I got you. I know what you did, dog. This reverse ritual made the demon perform the operation on itself, making the operation stop immediately. It's the most asinine thing. And then, of course, after this incident, Mr. Zellner asked Ed to take the mirror with him.
Demon, I command you to go fuck yourself!
Okay. Yeah, I could do that for you. Sorry for bothering you
guys. Yeah, I'm fucking myself right now. I got it.
The next one here, the next cool thing that they have is the shadow doll. Now, they have pictures of the shadow doll, and you can actually look at that. And that thing's pretty fucking creepy. Yeah. It's a weird doll. You can tell it looks like some type of like a Japanese doll. It's made from human and animal bones and parts. And so it's got bird feathers on its head. Its fingers actually have like human fingernails.
I heard it has pubic hair and teeth inside of it.
Yeah, it's got human teeth. It's something like something crazy like that. Yeah. It's
I made the pubic hair up.
The pubic hair, yeah, I'm sure if you lift up its little dress, it probably has something going on down there.
People from Connecticut go bald eagle, and everybody knows that.
Good people. The couple that had this, had these dolls, bought them from an antique dealer. They started having really bad nightmares that night, and when they woke up, they had scratch marks all over their bodies. The second night, they
sounds
continued...
Like some good hard fucking to me.
I know, exactly. That's a good night. The second night, the nightmares still continued, but when they woke up, they had scratch marks and claw marks on their body. Mm. They realized that something was wrong and immediately blamed it on the dolls, and they contacted Ed and Lorraine. They told hey, Eddie, what are you doing? They told Ed to take the dolls, and of course he did, putting them in his museum. He says that there are evil spirits residing in the dolls, and if the dolls are destroyed, the spirits are freed, and will follow whoever destroyed it into its home.
The one thing all of these artifacts have in common is the only backstory is from Ed Warren.
It's from Ed Warren, yeah.
Hey, these things are bad. Don't fuck with them, they're bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the common
enough for me.
That's the common thread here, is that most of the stuff that we're telling you...
strictly from the lips of the Warrens.
Yeah, and we'll get into a lot more of it at the end. And the big daddy that's in this house is the Annabelle doll.
Annabelle.
Anybody that's seen the movie knows anything about the movie knows what Annabelle looks like. According to the movie.
Yeah, there are no similarities
at all. No similarities whatsoever. Annabelle is actually just a Raggedy Ann doll. If you're not familiar with Raggedy Ann doll, it's the least threatening looking doll ever.
Yeah. It's like an old maid with like yarn hair.
Red hair and a blue
Just a few months ago, there
dress.
Was some type of zoning issue, and they had to move the Annabelle doll. And they did it on Facebook Live, and it had so many people watching it. But they had a priest come in, they're like, oh, they're fucking yelling at this thing and throwing water on it. And they got, like, welding gloves on to get it out of the case and move it. They genuinely believe that this thing is the fucking devil.
The case that it's actually in is pretty cool, and I'll kind of touch on that here in a second. This doll, if you look it up, it tops or is within the top three items that you'll find on most haunted items lists. I think all the ones that I looked at always had Annabelle there.
Yeah.
Within the top three. It's in a museum, the case in the museum, with a backlight, a red backlight, and a crucifix above the case, and a sign underneath that says, warning, positively, do not open. of course, this doll is the inspiration for the movies Annabelle and The Conjuring. At the beginning of the first Conjuring movie, that's how it starts out, as you see Annabelle, and it kind of goes into her a little bit, but then it goes into the parents, which we'll touch on. Now, according to claims made by Ed and Lorraine Warren, this is how the whole story with Annabelle originally started. There was a student nurse named Donna who was given the doll back in 1970 by her mother as a birthday present. Donna lived in an apartment with her roommate, Angie. Donna would place the doll on her bed for decoration. Because what college student doesn't have a doll on their bed?
I'm going to hide my dildo under this doll.
Stick it up the doll's ass. There's a nice hole there already. I'll keep it inconspicuous.
Raggedy Ann!
Raggedy Ann just sitting there like, yes, yes. Donna placed the doll on the bed. Now, within the first few days after receiving the doll, they noticed that the doll would appear to move around the house on its own. It started with real small movements at first, but as time went on, the movement became a little bit more noticeable. They would begin going to work, and when they came home, the doll would be in a completely different room. Sometimes it would be found with its arms and legs crossed, and other times it would be standing upright. You know, several times Donna put the doll on the couch before she had went to work, and when she returned, it would be back on her bed in her room, but the door would be closed. And so...
No bueno.
Yeah. Obviously, something was going on there. Now, about a month after them having the doll, they would start to find handwritten notes that would say, "Help us," and "Help Lou." Now, Lou was one of their friends who was staying there with them right around the time when they got the doll. If I was Lou, I would be shitting my pants.
I'm good.
Fine. Now,
I gotta go.
The handwriting that was on the notes resembled that of, like, a small child's. Yeah, it says really sloppy and shitty.
What would be even creepier is if it had the same writing as a Raggedy Ann doll.
Someone needs to investigate. Now, and they were written on parchment paper, which wasn't a typical paper that they were going to have inside of their house. One night, Donna came home to find that the doll had moved again, but she said that this time something seemed a little bit different. It seemed a little bit off as compared to the other times. She examined the doll, and she found what looked like blood drops the back of its hand and its chest. And then out of nowhere, another liquidy red substance appeared on the doll, and then they knew that they needed help.
Can you please not say liquidy anymore?
Liquidy red substance. They got a hold of a medium, and the medium told them that the doll was probably inhabited by a spirit.
Probably.
Now, when the medium went into a little bit more, you know, details trying to channel everything, they found that the spirit said that its name was Annabelle Higgins. And Annabelle was a 7-year-old girl who had lived on the apartment before the property, or on the property before the apartment was built. And that her body was found in a field where the apartment complex was built on. So the spirit of Annabelle told the medium that she felt, you know, she liked living with Donna and Angie, and she just wanted to stay with them and just be loved.
But I'm gonna bleed on shit, and I'm gonna play hide and seek even though I'm not supposed to move.
Donna having the big heart that she did, she felt bad for Annabelle, and she gave her permission to inhabit the doll and stay with them.
Okay, we're gonna get you a food bowl.
You know how I know you fucked up? You let a fucking spirit stay with the doll. Now,
Here, that's fine.
Yeah, you can pay rent, or live here without paying rent, that's totally cool. They later found out that Annabelle was not who she appeared to be, and that she wasn't just an ordinary doll, which of course they already knew. And this, we're going to start getting into the investigation stage of Annabelle. Going back to the Help Lou note, he didn't like the doll at all, of course. He tried to warn them that the doll was evil and that they needed to get rid of it.
Naturally.
Exactly. What kind of friend would want you to get rid of a fucking creepy doll that's leaving ominous notes for him? Now, Donna, of course, was becoming attached to the doll and didn't listen. Lou woke up one night after a reoccurring bad dream, and he could tell something was up. He felt awake, but he couldn't move.
Oh, so, yeah.
Sleep paralysis. Good old sleep paralysis.
He got some of that crocodile. Yeah. Some of that flocka.
He looked around the room and saw nothing different until he looked down towards his feet and saw Annabelle. She slowly went up his leg.
Listen, I think about... When you're telling me the story, I'm thinking about that, like, the Annabelle doll from the movie.
Yeah.
Peeking up over the feet of the bed. But then I change it to, like, a Raggedy Ann doll. And I just...
Housekeeping?
Yeah. I would just be like, hey, fucking go, lay the fuck down. I'm trying to sleep.
Yeah, if you're seeing the Annabelle doll from the movie, then you know, like, you're shitting your diaper. Yeah,
fuck.
Yeah, you're shitting your pants. So she slowly goes up his leg. starting to move closer to his chest. She gets to his chest, and then she stops. Within seconds after she stopped, she began strangling him, and he eventually blacked out. The next morning, he wakes up, and...
He's getting a blowjob.
Raggedy Ann's going to town. Yeah. He was convinced that it wasn't a dream, and... that he needed to get rid of that doll. But
I really like living here. I hope you guys don't get rid of me. I hope you like that late night handy I gave you. I tried to jerk you off in the middle of the night last night and you got really upset. Sorry, I'm into choking. I guess I should have asked if you were like that. I just thought all guys like that. It was good for me, at least. Pull my hair. Pull my yarn.
Pull my yarn. God damn it. They didn't get rid of the doll, of course. The next day, Lou and Angie were planning a road trip, and they heard a noise coming from Donna's room, which sounded like that there was somebody moving around in the room. They thought someone had broke in. When they opened the door, the room was completely empty. Except for Annabelle, of course. And she seemed like she was like thrown into a corner. In an awkward position in a weird spot of the room that you typically wouldn't leave a doll. Something just seemed weird. Lou began to search the room just to make sure if there was any evidence of forced entry or if there could have been an intruder. But as he looked around, he found nothing. He got close to the doll and felt some type of a presence behind him. He turned around and looked, but there was nothing there. And right when he turned around and noticed there was nothing there, he grabbed his chest. There was a cut that appeared, and he was bleeding. His shirt was covered in blood, and when they removed it, they found what looked to be like 7 claw marks. There was 3 vertical and 4 horizontal, and they were hot, like they were burns. Now, the scratches went away almost immediately and started to heal.
And then he finally broke down. He's like, all right, guys, I confess. I went to the club last night. I went home with 3 other guys. And I tried some fucking shit that I've never done before.
I tried some shit.
And I'm trying to blame it on this stupid fucking Raggedy Ann doll. And I don't think you're buying it.
The next day, those scratches were almost like about halfway gone. And then they were completely gone by 2 days. Donna finally realizes that this spirit isn't that of a little girl, but probably more in the demonic side of
maybe,
the spectrum.
Maybe not.
Probably. They contact an Epicostal priest named Father Hegan. Father Hegan felt that this was a spiritual matter and that he needed higher authority, so he contacted Father Cook, who didn't want to fuck with it, so he contacted the Warrens.
yeah, I'm not gonna fuck with it, but I got this dumbass out of Connecticut.
Ed and Lorraine immediately, of course, took interest in the case. It appeared to them as if the doll was being, you know...
I read that they were pretty straightforward, like, okay, just give us the doll. We want the doll. Give us the doll and this will all go away. And that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, they got the doll. They were convinced that it was an inhuman demonic spirit, because spirits don't actually possess inanimate objects. They will possess people. An inhuman spirit, though, since it was never a living thing, it can attach itself to a place, to an object, to pretty much anything. So the spirit using the doll was only using the doll until it could find a human that it wanted to possess. Fucking Lou, man. This inhuman spirit was using the doll by means of teleportation to make Donna, Angie, and Lou give it attention. So it would move, it would use it to move about the room and things like that. Because once you start to get close and once you pay more attention to this item and this spirit, the more prominent it becomes. The spirit would feed off of the girl's emotional vulnerabilities, and that's why it appeared to be a little... That's why it told them that it was a little girl through the medium. That way, so they would feel bad for it and give it permission to haunt that item inside of the apartment.
Why?
They fucked up there. Now, it was able to... From having access... From pretty much having a go-ahead of being able to stay in the apartment, that gave it the means to materialize the notes and the blood and even able to attack Lou. So they pretty much brought all that on themselves. The human spirit at this point in time was at the infestation phase. So if it had been 2 or 3 more weeks, it would have been able to completely possess, harm, or kill everyone in that apartment.
Oh, that's so fun.
At least they finally did something. Their Father Cook, along with the Warrens, came and he performed an exorcism throughout the entire apartment. The Warrens were sure that that would make the entity peace out. They took the doll back with them, and on the way home, they decided, you know what, we should probably avoid highways in case the spirit's still with the doll. And of course, while driving back, they were feeling an extreme hatred.
Oh, yeah.
In the car. The car would
make sure you write that in the script. Make sure you write that shit in the script.
The car would repeatedly swerve and stall, causing the power brakes and steering to fail.
Kind of how their piece of shit fucking car just rolled in the middle of the street by itself.
They just had a fucking beater Cutlass. Yeah. Ed reached into a black bag that he had in the back seat, pulled out a vial of holy water, and doused the doll. The disturbances stopped immediately, and they arrived home safely.
Thank God!
Now, when they got home, Ed sat the doll in a chair, and it would repeatedly levitate a little bit. The first few weeks, the doll would show up in various rooms in the house. When the Warrens were away, they would lock the doll in the outer office, and then when they returned, they would just find it chilling in Ed's easy chair. In one instance, a Catholic exorcist named Father Joe Bradford came to the house. He picked up the doll and said, "You're just a rag doll, Annabelle. You can't hurt anyone." And then he tossed the doll back in the chair. Ed told him, "That's one thing you better not say." And when Father Bradford When he left later, his brakes failed at a busy intersection.
He died.
He was involved in a near fatal accident, but it completely destroyed his vehicle. And at this time, this is when the Warrens built the case for Annabelle and kept her inside of the museum.
You gotta get a kennel for this thing.
I know. You gotta put her down. We get a muzzle and everything. Annabelle still sits in this case, unmoving, nowadays. But in the museum, it does seem that Annabelle may have been responsible for the death of a young man who antagonized her, which I think this is one of the stories we put up on our Instagram this past week. This young man comes to the museum with his girlfriend on his motorcycle. Ed's telling him giving him the spiel about, you know, Annabelle's backstory, and this hard-ass guy comes up to the glass and starts to bang on it and saying, "Oh yeah, if you could put scratches on other people, then put scratches on me, pussy." I don't think he actually said pussy, but...
No, he did.
Ed, it's written down, it's documented.
CCTV proved it.
Yeah, Ed kicked the guy out.
Kicked him in the nuts.
Yeah. On the way home from the museum, This guy loses control of his motorcycle, hitting a tree, killing him, and putting his girlfriend in the hospital for over a year. Man. So that's the in and outs of Annabelle. Whew, what a fucking crazy doll.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, all of this, all this information is on their website.
There is no...
This is on, of their, yeah. of Ed's, like, his story. This is his...
Awesome. This is the website, yeah, made by them. There is no confirmed story on the motorcycle death. This is just something, this is a story.
Or really that, of any of it.
Yeah. This is just a story that Ed told to lengthen the lure of this fucking fetish doll.
Interesting enough, whenever they took her out to move her, they found the dildo still in her ass.
I like when the doll chokes me, and I like when it makes my chest bleed. If you take it away from me, I'll fucking kill myself.
This doll is the equivalent of Jeffrey Dahmer's mannequin doll that he kept in his grandma's basement.
Aren't you so pretty?
And then from here, we'll go into the Perrin family. The Perrin family are the family that was in the first Conjuring movie. This story is actually, the story in the movie jive pretty well. They did a pretty good job of, from what I read on this incident, of it being pretty solid throughout the movie. 1970, Roger and Carolyn Perrin and their five children five daughters. Yeah,
Can we just stop for a moment of prayer for those two people?
That'd be your life.
Yeah.
They move into a farmhouse, which is called the Old Arnold Estate, and this is in Harrisville, Rhode Island. This house was built in 1736, a large country home, 10 rooms, a big dude. First day they get into the home, they start noticing something strange.
I think it started with weird voices.
Yeah, well, first, before they heard any of that, the previous owners told them, at nighttime, leave all the lights on. Don't turn the lights off.
Hey, and by the way, here's the keys.
Don't turn the lights off. Yeah, fuck that.
There's just one more thing I wanted to tell you before we fucking left.
The deed's already signed. They're done. They're just spilling the beans.
Yeah. The fucking walls bleed.
The green slime.
Yeah.
the home had been the place of hauntings, supposedly by eight different generations of family tragedies. The late Mrs. John Anude. I don't know. That may have been a typo. It may have been Arnold.
I love a nude.
Yeah, a nude.
A good nudie.
Yeah, it was Arnold. She hung herself in the rafters above the barn when she was 93. She said, peace out. Fuck this. I've had enough of this.
That's not that bad of a deal. It's kind of like, all right, it's fun. It's been great. And I'm tired of being miserable.
Yeah, she's done.
The fact that she was 93 and able to hang herself is pretty impressive.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to go out, you might as well go out on your own means. And there was a farmhand girl who was raped and murdered an 11-year-old girl. There were suicides by hangings, poisonings. Four men froze to death on the farmlands. A lot of stuff. The demon spirits that resided in the house would reportedly pull the girl's hair and their limbs at night while they were sleeping.
Do you have notes about the name of the demon?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Well,
one of them, Bathsheba?
Bathsheba, yeah. That's the one that messes with Mrs. Perrin.
Yes.
So they would mess with the girls while they were sleeping. They would bang on interior walls doors, and the front door. That's all a normal occurrence in this house. The Perrin family would also claim that they would hear cries throughout the night, and those cries would tell of seven dead soldiers inside of the walls. Fucking crazy. Yeah. The oldest daughter, Andrea, talked in her book about how one of the most evil spirits had molested the five girls during the nights. Not all of the spirits were bad, though. They just sat around and watched these girls getting molested by their friends. There was one spirit that they presumed there was a female would, and this is so stereotypical. This is they presume it to be a female. Why? Because it would sweep the entire house and leave and leave little piles of dirt for the family to easily dispose of.
It was either a woman or some dude who had a wife with a really good paying job.
He got bitched out so much throughout his life that he just loved sweeping. Yeah.
I gotta make this right in the afterlife.
Another friendly ghost was believed to be the spirit of Johnny Arnold, who hung himself in the attic in the 1700s. The girls called him Manny. His name was Johnny Manny. I guess that's close enough. But the worst demon of them all was... it's spelled Bethesda. Sherman.
I have as Bathsheba.
Or Bathsheba.
Bathsheba Thayer.
Sherman. I'm gonna call this thing Sherman. And this one was a practicing Satanist. This spirit targeted Mrs. Perrin, and she was said to have been a witch who hung herself in the early 1900s behind the barn.
I read that she had 4 kids, and 3 of the children died extremely young. And the townsfolk believe she practiced the dark arts, and she sacrificed the 3 children to Satan.
Yes.
And that's why she kind of had the witch thing. But they said that this demon, Bathsheba, was... she was completely consumed by the fact that there was another woman in the house, sorry, which was Carolyn.
Right.
And she was very upset that she was no longer the focal woman of the home, so she would consistently... attack Carolyn, and sometimes she would often grab Carolyn's husband by the pecker, grab his dick and grab his ass and like walk grab by and like lick his neck and stuff, just completely fucked up shit.
And it's also said that she would target Mrs. Perrin, the mom thing, that was one of the things, and also because she was not religious. I'd say that she was weak of faith.
Weak of faith.
Weak of faith.
Aren't we all?
Sherman, now, the appearance of the spirit was pretty cool. Said that she was described as being covered in cobwebs and vermin, and with a visibly broken neck.
Oh, yeah, her head would hang off to the side.
Yeah, yeah. And you could always tell she was around, because it always smelled like shit.
Like fecal.
Like dead people and asshole.
Yeah.
Mrs. Perrin says that the
dog shit. Had... No, the dog didn't shit. That fucking ghost is back.
Andrea, was that you? Miss Perrin says that the spirit had slapped, pinched, and taunted her with lit torches.
Oh,
that's like a mob lynching. Like that's pretty fucked up. And it's also said that the spirit possessed her as well, which in the movie that's one of the big things. The ghost gets on top of her and then fucking throws up what looks like blood in her mouth.
Right.
That's pretty sweet. Attacks on her became more and more harsh until they decided to get in contact with Ed and Lorraine. The Perrins had heard of the Warrens at one of their public appearances that they were having. Mrs. Perrin was actually attending one of those. And she spoke with them, kind of gave them the rundown of what was happening at the house, and the Warrens believed the story, and believed that Bathsheba had possessed her, and they decided that the exorcism was going to be the best idea.
They brought out a horde of, like, mediums, and...
they brought out a lot of people. Media. Yeah, they wanted to try to get everything documented as much as they can.
Yeah, sure, documented.
Yeah, Andrea, the daughter... says that the night that the exorcism took place was probably the most terrifying night of all. She says that she remembers her mom being thrown 20 feet into another room.
Jesus.
Though the Warrens' exorcism, they performed the exorcism themselves, and it helped, but only shortly.
That's the thing, is you have to be, like, a chosen...
Like a certified exorcist.
You can't... just show up and be like, all right, I'm here to get this shit out of you.
Yes.
And that's what Ed Warren was doing, which I've told you before, I believe in demon possession, and something like that would just completely incite the demon more than already was.
Right. They would just take it as a joke, essentially.
Right, and that's kind of how this story ended. In the movie, there was a happy ending, you know, that's not necessarily what happened.
Yes, it wasn't a happy ending for the parents. They tried to leave the house, but due to their financial issues, having all their money tied up into the house, they were stuck in this place for 10 years.
Yeah.
And finally, in 1980, they were able to leave the house and move to Georgia. Now, the current owners of the home, as of according to this article, they're named Norma and Jerry Sutcliffe.
Yeah.
They have also reported paranormal activity in the house, but nothing as extreme right. as what the parents claimed
Absolutely.
Had happened at the house.
Yep.
So that pretty much that wraps up what I have for the parents, and thus ending the Conjuring movie.
Well, right. The parents eventually said to the Warrens, "Get the fuck out of here! You're making everything worse."
Right.
And the parents left, the Warrens left. And the parents didn't have any, the issues with the demons kind of ceased at that point after they made the Warrens leave.
Funny.
Yeah, funny how that works.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just pissing it off. You're just poking him with a stick. You're just pissing it off. That's all you're doing right now. Get the fuck out of here.
Take your shit, get the fuck out, let me figure this shit out. 10 years later, they have to fucking leave.
Yeah. And Ed, he always had like these... He reminds me of a used car salesman.
That's what I think.
He would try and upsell stuff. Like, one of his quotes was, "If you look at a fan and it's standing still, you can see the propellers very easily. But if that fan starts up, you can't see anything. It's invisible. Spirits are on that different vibrational field. They're all around us right now, but you can't see them. But if you were like Lorraine, you could see them clairvisually. Hear them. Clonally." I mean... So he would go into these houses and say, "Listen, you got a demon here, but for $500 more, I can make this motherfucker go away.
This dude was
and
a hell of a promoter.
For $200 more, I can make it to where it never comes back."
he's like the 1970s Billy
yeah.
Mays.
Yeah. What? Call now, right now. 3 easy payments, $29.95. Get yours. Cash on delivery not accepted.
This is fucking great. I love these two. This brings us to, we'll kind of backtrack a little bit and start with the Amity hauntings. The Amity Horror. Amityville, this starts November 13th, 1974, and it's funny how I've noticed that all these start in the 70s, when a lot of people were on a lot of fucking drugs.
A lot of drugs, a lot of alcoholism. That's, in my opinion, that's what Ed Warren was doing, was preying on people that had fucking mental health issues, financial issues, alcohol and drug abuse disorders, and he was just preying on these people. That's what I think. But well, here
yeah.
am I.
we got kind of get a little bit of a theory here. This happened, of course, in Amityville, New York. Starts out, Ronald DeFeo bursts into Harry's bar, screaming about how his parents had been shot. The police go to his house. They find the bodies of his father, mother, and 4 out of the 5 children, all face down in their beds. Executed. Now, Ronald claims he was not home during these murders, but he ends up finding the bodies whenever he got home. Police, of course, look through the house, find a gun box under his bed for a .35 Marlin rifle in his room.
There's some bullets down there, too.
There were. Now, after this gun box and the bullets were found, Ronald confesses to the murder, of course. He is tried and found guilty of the murders and sentenced to 6 consecutive life terms.
Not before he tried to plead not guilty by reason of insanity.
Insanity. The out there trying to pull the out.
Yeah, the old go-to.
And there was never any real reason given as to how he could have acted alone in an upscale community. The shots were never heard. It's kind of a fishy thing.
Yes.
Now, the Lutz family, this is where all the...
Where it gets sticky.
The fun stuff happens. December 18th, 1975, the Lutz family moves into the old DeFeo home, 13 months after the DeFeo murders. While unpacking, a Catholic priest arrives to bless the home. He goes upstairs, enters the bedroom of what used to be Mark and John DeFeo.
Get out!
He begins sprinkling holy water, and he hears a voice which says, "Get out." Exactly. Which, of course, he did. And this priest, asshole of the podcast, goes downstairs, does not tell the family what he hears, but tells them,
do not use the upstairs room as a bedroom, and do not let anyone sleep in there.
You close that fucking door and you don't ever open it.
Yeah, this fucking asshole. The Lutz listened to the priest, of course, and decided to use that room as just a sewing room. The first night they were in the house, they got this strange sensation, and within a few days, the family started to notice, you know, everybody's personality seemed to get a little bit different. They began to get in more arguments. Everybody was just kind of crabby and shitty.
George was cold all the fucking time.
George is getting chills. He keeps shoving shit in the fireplace.
Come here! And he cut off some of your hair real quick and run out of firewood.
George also notices a change in his grooming habits, and I would love to know what that means.
I used to shave my nuts, but I don't feel like it anymore. I'm just letting them bitches grow.
I was talking to Larry down at the bar, and his wife does whatever he wants, and he doesn't take a fucking bath but more than a couple times every year.
I'm tired of Kathy trying to tell me to shave my balls. I'm just going to let that shit grow out now. And
smegma.
Smegma. Fuck peeling back the foreskin. I'm done with that.
Oh, God.
Kathy's health, of course, starts to drastically decline as well. The Lutz's daughter spent all her time in her bedroom playing with an imaginary friend who she said was a red-eyed pig called Jody.
That's the freakiest part for me.
That is terrifying. I mean, having an imaginary friend's one thing. I think that's kind of normal. But having your imaginary friend be a red-eyed pig.
And she says that the pig would sometimes
be
as big as
the house.
Yeah, as big as the house.
Yes, it could transform size and shape and be as big as the house. And that's ridiculous. And, of course, this imaginary friend couldn't be seen by anyone unless she wanted them to be seen. Now, the house, of course, would have mysterious foul odors in different locations. Black stains would appear on the toilets ceramic features.
Yeah, that's called not fucking clean.
That's called old shit that just molds. Kathy was touched by an unseen force, and a green gelatin-like substance would appear throughout the house. And that's just because she was a horrible housekeeper.
And it was really prevalent in the movie The Flies, and that was
that
was also a big
the big deal
part of it, that there were just fucking flies everywhere. Thousands. They could not get the flies to go away.
Thousands, and that's in the sewing room upstairs that the priest told them to stay out of. Thousands of flies, or hundreds, I should say, hundreds or thousands, would appear. And George would constantly wake up at 3:15 a.m. nightly, and that was said to have been the time that the Defoes were murdered. One night, when George woke up, his wife had transformed into a 90-year-old hag.
Some people are into that.
I know. The next night, she began to levitate off the bed. They attempted to contact a priest again, but anytime they would try to contact a priest, their phones would shut off. Pay your fucking bill. When they couldn't get a priest to return, they decided to take things in their own hands, and they would walk through the house with a crucifix reciting the Lord's Prayer. Now, a chorus of voices erupted, asking,
ooh, will you stop?
It's so polite.
Yeah. Will you stop? Please, this is hurting us.
The final night was reported to have been the worst. Of course, because it was the final night. It had to have been the worst. There were bangings and rappings said to have been as loud as a marching band throughout the house, and furniture was moving on its own. Now, 28 days after moving in, the family pretty much had enough. They packed up their few belongings that they had left and moved in with Kathy's mother. 20 days after they left is when Ed and Lorraine were contacted by a news reporter named Marvin Scott. The Warrens, with a team of reporters, investigators, parapsychologists, all met at the house for an investigation. And during this investigation, Ed was pushed to the floor while using religious provocation in the basement. I'm friends with Jesus. He's going to beat your ass. He was provoking him with religion.
WWJD, you sons of bitches.
Lorraine was overwhelmed by the sense of a demonic presence and kept seeing psychic impressions of the DeFeo bodies covered in white sheets. And she could feel herself physically being pushed back. This is fun. The research team captured an image of the spirit, and it or captured an image of a spirit, and it looked like a little boy peering from the second
yeah,
floor.
Yeah, it definitely looked someone like someone from one of the fucking film crews just like walking around the corner and like stepped back. Like, oh, shit, they're taking a picture.
Yeah. And he tried to duck back real quick, but he still got his...
whatever.
Yeah, it is what it is. During this, they found out about a man named John Ketchum, who was a... this terminology is funny. He was a practicing black magician. And I don't think they meant that he was black and he was a magician.
No, he was an African-American magician.
Oh, okay. I just figured he was a guy that practiced black magic. it's one or the other. Either way, that's yeah. fucking sweet.
Yeah.
And he owned a cottage on the land before the house was built. He requested to have his remains buried on the property, and they're supposedly still there. I think we've mentioned them before in another podcast as well, but the Shinnecock Indians... The Shiny Cock Indians.
Listen, Indians are not to be fucked with.
No, fuck no.
No.
They had an enclosure on the land that they used to house, like, they're sick and they're mad, and they were pretty much left to die there. And the Warrens believe that these previous events contributed to all the negative energy that would draw the attention of all these demonic spirits. They... retrieved some of the Lutz's belongings after they left, and the deed to the house, and gave them back to them, and the Lutz's actually sold those belongings and moved to California. They purchased the house, and this is just some crazy shit, they purchased the house in 1975 for $80,000, and just 7 years ago in 2010, this house sold for $950,000.
Location, location, location!
And history. Yeah. And of course, it's back on the market again.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, if you guys want to buy it, have at it.
Yeah, then you got the subsequent owners of the house. They've done all, they've had their own mediums come in, their own investigators, and none of them have found anything.
Jack right. Squat.
Yeah.
So, the last one that I have is the Enfield Poltergeist, which is...
And to speak to the Amityville Horror again, the subsequent owners sued the publishers of the book... for, like, because people are constantly trespassing and
yes.
causing a racket. So they sued, and they did get an out-of-court settlement from the publishers of the book.
Good.
So,
good for them.
And the defense attorney for DeFeo, the one that shot and killed everyone in the house,
yes.
hooked up with the Lutz family.
Right.
And they had a night of... wine. They had four glasses. Yeah. They had four bottles of wine.
That they and the Warrens did as well, right?
Or
was this another one where they got loaded and decided to come up with their story? That may have been.
I think it was the Lutz and the defense attorney.
Okay.
They conjured up all these stories. They made all these stories up over, and they said, "This is what we're going to pitch to the media."
And this has been proved. This has been yes. this is for real.
And then, this is proved. The attorney came out and said, yeah, we just got drunk and made these stories up one night. And no, people don't know that he came out and said this stuff is not real. It is made up. We made this stuff up to make money off of the murders. And DeFeo has since done interviews from prison where he said, yeah, there was nothing wrong with me. I fucking did it.
It's highly embellished.
Yes.
Highly embellished.
Right.
And that whole story is real easy to prove. And getting into the last one that I'm going to touch on is the Enfield Poltergeist, like I already stated. This is back in August 1977 in Enfield, England. Mother Peggy Hodgson calls the police to come to her house after four children claim that there was furniture moving on its own and knocking from inside the walls.
And there's a police report where the police officer saw a chair fly across the house.
Yes, they actually did an affidavit for that.
Yeah.
And my name's Bill Wilkins, and I took a piss in my pants, and then I fell down the fucking stairs trying to go change my underwear, and now I'm fucking dead.
They... Goddamn fucking... This damn ghost, he's an asshole. And since this was a paranormal event, when the cops got the cops arrived, I mean, you said there was already an officer there that said she saw a chair levitate and all that good crap. The police got there, and they were like, what the fuck you expect us to do? This is like a paranormal thing. We can't do shit. You want us to arrest the ghost?
You have to call Ed and Lorraine Warren out of New England.
It did gain the attention of some paranormal investigators from the Society for Psychical Research, some professors of psychology, and the Warrens, as you stated.
It's like blood in the water for them.
Yes,
like,
exactly. Ooh, exactly. They sense it.
More money.
Yes. Some of the events that occurred while they were doing this research here, they would hear bangings on the wall, bending silverware, moving furniture, and 11-year-old Janet Hodgson was said to have been possessed by the man named Bill Wilkins.
My name's Bill Wilkins, and sometimes I spread my fucking butt cheeks and I let people shove fucking whatever they want up my ass, and it gave me a hemorrhage, and now I'm fucking dead.
He died in the house before they moved in, and she is also supposedly had levitated above her bed. The male voice coming from Janet had said, and this was quoted, and this is, I was telling Nick about this earlier, this is very sing-songy, and it's kind of funny, and I'm gonna say it the way that they have it listed, but I'm gonna say it in a fun way so that it kind of sounds like a song.
Good.
Just before I died, I went blind, and then I had an hemorrhage and I fell asleep and died. In a chair in a corner downstairs.
This guy was a fucking, like...
My name's Bill Wilkins, and I will not eat green eggs and ham with a fox in a box on a train or a plane.
They said the girl that was possessed by Mr. Wilkins, she had been practicing ventriloquism, yes. And she could throw her voice wonderfully.
They said that the sounds were very likely they could have came from
Bill
a girl.
Bill would change subjects very suddenly, which the girl that was possessed by Bill, she always did that. She would change subjects very suddenly. And also, Bill seemed to be extremely obsessed with the periods of the young girls.
Ooh.
Which this was the age about a girl would receive her period.
Right.
Which kind of coincides with this girl making the fucking shit up. And when the investigators were moving throughout the home for this, there was one film crew. They went around the corner and they saw the girls, one of the girls bending spoons. Like, you know, and they noticed anytime anything would happen, it would always be when the girls weren't around.
Of course.
And at one point they caught them beating brooms against the wall from other sides of the wall.
It's a shit show.
Fucking reeks.
Yeah. I don't have much more on this besides other shit moving around and marbles rolling across the floor and shit like that. There's not a lot. The movie is a lot better than the actual story is. It's very, I don't know, embellished, I guess it would be what the only way to say it. I don't even know. They make it a lot bigger than what it was.
Well, they have
really
to for Hollywood in order to get people to come see the movie.
And they feed off the whole based on true story type deal for these horror movies. And
right.
As we've explained a little bit, that there is a lot of this that completely stinks of shit.
Yeah, like the Valak, the nun.
Yeah.
That is actually a male demon. When you research it, Valak was the president of Hell. Kind of how it was explained.
Oh, okay,
and,
that's cool.
He was always said to be riding a two-headed dragon, and
that's fucking
and
badass.
Have 30 legions of demons that was at his disposal. And the story originally says that he would take the shape of a child with wings, like a wicked child with wings. And I think the only thing scarier than a fucked up nun is like a wicked child with wings just flying around. That's what they should have went with, honestly.
That's pretty sweet. I like that.
But
it's my next tattoo. Do you have anything else on the other ones?
I mean,
it's all the same.
Yeah. The pattern here is every single time the Warrens portray a story that only they put out. There's no secondhand accounts. There's a picture, if you go and look at the Enfield, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Which is The Conjuring 2. There's a real picture of one of the girls levitating above her bed. It looks jumping like she's, off the bed. It looks like she's jumping off her bed doing a toe touch.
Her knees, yeah, her knees are bent. Yeah. And like what would have been a jumping motion.
They said she was a star athlete, always like a cut above as far as, you know, running.
Ugly as all get out, yeah. But she was
yeah, a haircut like a fucking Russian war helmet, but
little boy on the Dutch boy paint cans.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean it. The movies are great.
They are good.
Ed and Lorraine, I think, are
okay.
They're making the best of what they can get.
It does say that they had the 10,000 investigations, and I am not going to say with confidence they never experienced anything.
Right? I'm yeah, sure you can't say that, but they it's
did,
embellished.
They probably did rattle the cages of some demons and saw some paranormal shit happen. And they ran with it, and they just kept on regurgitating these stories over and over and over, and the media would catch on, and they would get paid for it. So they would just keep on embellishing this stuff in an attempt to keep up, you know, to keep their name out there,
right.
To keep the money coming in.
To stay relevant.
And a lot of it was embellished, but then I think some of it probably was true to a certain extent. Like when the parents said, get out of here, leave us alone, this is getting worse, I think an untrained demonologist was trying to exorcise these demons, and it wasn't happening.
Right.
It was just making things worse.
It was kind of like a slap in the face.
The parents were like, get out, please, leave us alone.
Yeah, whatever they would have thought, you know, that would have made the situation a little bit better. And I absolutely agree. I think that they are, I don't really want to say frauds, but I feel like they're...
No, they're frauds.
They're definitely liars.
Yes,
and they're saying whatever they can.
There was some truth
to make the most of their monetary value of what they can out of the cases.
There definitely was some truth to some of their stories.
Absolutely,
not a lot.
Yeah, not a lot. But either way, see the movies. The movies are always good. I always enjoy those movies. And I think that pretty much wraps up.
We have to end with our new segment.
Oh.
Animal fights.
Oh, it's my turn, isn't it, this week?
Yeah, it's your turn.
I'm going to say, let's go with who would win between a great white and a crocodile.
Great white and a crocodile? I can tell you who would win that fight, easily.
He's 72 years old and his name's Bill Wilkins. And he died in a fucking chair.
This conundrum is bothering me more so than the Warrens.
What?
Because you got to think, sharks are going to have razor teeth.
How deep is the water that they're fighting in?
I don't even think they can. Can they even live in the same type of water? Not that matters.
No,
but
I think.
Let's just say in a perfect world,
salt water and fresh water.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, let's just say they get into a fight. You got a great white who's got what, 7 layers of teeth, razor sharp teeth.
Fucking stupid.
You got the crocodile who's got armor skin but can bite and twist.
I got my money on the great white.
I do,
man.
I think
I've
I do
watched
too.
Jaws too many times. I've watched a great white rip a boat in half. Okay.
There's as much truth to that as there is to the Warrens.
And that one crocodile or whatever.
Crocodiles are scary as
they
shit.
They are. That little kid got eaten at Disney
yes,
World.
Disney
that's,
World.
That's tragic, man.
The happiest place on earth.
That's wretched. Fuck you, Mickey.
If you want to get rid of one of your kids, go hang out at one of the ponds.
Yeah, if you want to go $4,000 in debt and completely ruin your life for a few months, go to Disney.
Well, I think that puts a wrap on this one.
That's the end of Bill Wilkins.
We definitely had some fun audio issues on this one.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have
an air conditioner unit that we used the last podcast, and it didn't bring up a lot of noise, but for the first half of this one, it was noisier than shit.
Sorry.
And I'm sorry, I'm not going to run that anymore, but you probably are going to notice a big change, and that's just me turning off the air.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my kids, of course, as always, they're here.
So we're going to resolve that.
Yeah,
we have an exterminator coming in.
Let's just call Ed and Lorraine and see. Oh, Lorraine, I should say. Poor Ed, he's pushing up daisies now.
Let's summon him. We can summon Ed.
Do you want to talk about what we're going to do in the next couple episodes? I think we got some good ones and some fun ones planned.
I think the next one is going to be the
Neverland Ranch.
Oh yeah, the fucking terror that happened to little kids' buttholes at that
bubbles?
Ranch. Yeah.
Yes, this is Michael. I'm gonna blow bubbles in your ass. I thought you said Bubbles was your monkey. Bubbles
That's
is
what
my
I said.
Monkey. You didn't mishear me.
And then after that, it's going to be the Mandela effect.
The Mandela effect.
Which is deep.
That's it's such a fun topic.
We're going to need so much pot for that episode.
No, it's not even this. It's so fucking cool. Yeah. I've listened to a lot of things about it, and I love the subject. So these next two ones are going to be a lot of fun. I don't think there's anybody that's covered Neverland Ranch.
Right.
If they have...
Fuck you.
They're not going to do it as good as what we're going to do. Let's just face it. No, in all seriousness, it's gonna be the next couple episodes are gonna be really fun. I'm really excited about them, and I'm excited about this interview about our live show that we're gonna be doing.
We are growing, and I'm really glad for the people that are growing with us, because we connect with you guys. We always talk to you.
We're talking to you guys all.
We don't blow anybody off.
No,
we're constantly engaging. And I love talking to you guys. So keep listening. Keep talking to us.
We love hearing from you guys. Yes. Love talking to you guys. It's a fun experience.
Yep.
And we just enjoy doing
this.
Happy
to be on
the ride.
Enjoy
that people are listening and they find it crazy that we have merch in fucking Indonesia,
Australia, and Singapore.
All across the United States right now. It's awesome to think that people that you know that we're just not friends with, like in real life, are listening to us.
I thought my mom and dad would be the only ones that listen. Turns out they don't listen at all.
Neither does my wife. Our wives, I should say. They hate us. They get enough of us throughout the week. Yeah. They don't want to hear us like complain about stuff that they don't know anything about. Well,
all right, that's a wrap.
This wraps up Ed and Lorraine Warren. Yep. We will catch you guys next week, and we love you.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Ohio Nation.